This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, real quick, let's address this Mike Walls, Alex Wong being out. Trump dismisses, fires two members of his national security team. I know that everybody's going to cloak everything. And, well, he resigned. He stepped away. Everybody knows what happened here. He was fired. Trump fired him. I talked about the necessity for this a while ago. Remember when I talked about it? Mike Walls, if he is the responsible party, and I think we could probably guess that by now, who's been on this show, and I have nothing personal against Mike Walls, should be fired and fired immediately. It should serve as a lesson to everybody in this administration that accidents, mistakes, they're not good enough. It won't work. We only have 4 years. We have to move at breakneck speed. Speed and purpose, getting things done. Boo-boos like that can sink us. So he's gone. All right? But it is what it is. This is how things need to happen. It's a harsh world. It's a harsh life. The stakes of the game are high. That's where we're at. Now, on to something else before we get to these judges really quickly. In fact, Elvis Chan is going to lead us right to these judges. Elvis Chan. You remember Elvis Chan. Elvis Chan was the guy who was liaising. We'll use that wonderful professional term. With Facebook, other social media companies, on behalf of the FBI to ensure Hunter Biden's laptop story was censored and the American people can't see it. He took his position as special agent at the FBI and used it to try to help Joe Biden win an election. I was calling for his head a while ago. I believe everything that comes out of the DOJ, FBI, everywhere, I believe all of it is a lie. I think I'm being lied to at all times. And if you would like to earn back my trust, so I believe you ever again about anything, you will arrest that human being. You will put him through a public trial for violating the civil rights of Americans, for violating, abusing his post at the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And as soon as the cell door closes on Elvis Chan, as he begins his 30-year prison sentence in Fort Leavenworth, then you will start to earn back a little bit of my trust. Okay, well, this isn't that, but it's a start, something to celebrate. He's been placed on terminal leave, okay? They fired him. He probably, we don't know all the details yet, still gonna collect a government check, retirement, things like that. So is this enough? No, it's not near enough. But if this is step one to putting that evil secret state police henchman behind bars, good. If this is the end of it, then it's not good, then it's pathetic. But if this is the start, and it very well may be, I say that's a good thing. And people must go to prison. Because, of course, we're going to be talking a lot about the judges tonight, the judicial system. And judges have to go to prison. Before we get to the specific judges and things like that, remember this. Communism is revolutionary. Always has been, always was. It's a revolutionary religion. It believes that it has to tear down the existing structures, the existing power structures, existing institutions. It's revolutionary. And because it's revolutionary, it involves breaking the law. It always has. It's going to break whatever existing laws are there in whatever country it's trying to have a revolution in. You have to if you're having a revolution. You can't have a revolution and be lawful about it, right? So communists are always breaking the law. They lie, they murder, they hurt people, they burn things. This is how communists act because they're revolutionaries. And that's how they justify it in their mind. But something kept happening as the communists globally kept trying to get their movement into place in country after country after country. It wasn't just Russia. These people were always trying in France and Germany and Italy and America. You know, they kept running into the institutions. They kept slamming into them, mainly the law enforcement institutions here in the United States of America. We had so many radical communist groups who wanted to murder everybody and burn everything down, groups like the Weather Underground, but they kept running into the law. They kept getting arrested for their crimes. Hey, you can't arrest me. It was just a nail bomb. They had to go back to the drawing board. And they figured out, hey, if we keep running into the justice system in America, if they keep stopping us, if that wall keeps stopping the revolution, well, why don't we just take over the justice system? And so, credit to them, for years and years and years and years and years, America's communists have taken over the law schools of this country. In those law schools, they educate generation after generation after generation of lawyers, and of course, the lawyers become judges, in communist indoctrination. The belief that communism is great, Democrats are wonderful, Republicans are evil, and these foot soldiers go out into the legal world and they use whatever positions of power they can find to push and protect the communist revolution. Exhibit A great one would be the judge in New Mexico, a judge in New Mexico who was caught and photographed with a prison gang, a foreign prison gang member living with him and his wife.
Judge Cano, soon to be former Judge Cano, got his charges were just unsealed. He's charged with obstruction. He is charged. He admitted post Miranda. He took one of the TDA members' cell phones himself, took it, beat it with a hammer, destroyed it, and then walked the pieces to a city dumpster to dispose of it to protect him. The wife also is charged with destroying evidence. Sandra, not only that, this TDA member, and he had on a necklace that said kill, something about death. He had tattoos all over him. He also had on his cell phone pictures of two decapitated victims. The judge and his wife gave him assault rifles that belonged to their daughter. That's what they're charged with. In the criminal report affidavit, he goes to a shooting range with these assault rifles, with a suppressor, with other known TDA members, and they're shooting. This is the last person that we want in our country, nor will we ever tolerate a judge or anyone else harboring them.
The judge doesn't see himself as a judge. Probably, most likely, has never really seen himself as a judge. He's always been a communist revolutionary. Communist revolutionaries know the increase in violent crime helps the revolution. So that judge worked his way up through the legal system and put on those judges' robes so he could push the revolution, protect the revolution, you see? This Dugan is no different. Remember this Judge Dugan in Wisconsin? Remember this judge who got arrested because she did what now? There was an illegal in her courtroom. She found out the illegal was about to be deported. She grabbed him and his lawyer, pulled him into her private chambers, and whisked him out the back door so he could escape arrest and deportation. To a normal person, when they hear these stories, their mind just gets completely blown. But I understand perfectly what's going on. You see, Hannah Dugan is not a judge. That's a uniform she wears. You know, and uniform isn't even the right word. It's a costume. She puts on a costume as a judge. Hannah Dugan's a communist.
The law is a real challenge in making sure that justice happens for people. It's transformative in people's lives, but it also, especially in the United States, it's considered a stabilizing force. It's something that keeps us on a constant path. The rule of law is how we address our social issues, how we address our disputes, but also how we grow as people. I, as a person who for a couple decades almost represented low-income people, it is due process that really equalizes those differences between people. Then we're able to achieve that equal justice that we are promised and hope to have continue despite our differences, despite our class differences, despite our racial and religious differences.
Is that a judge? Just up there interpreting the law, administering justice. Is that how she sees herself? Of course not. She's not a judge. That's a costume. She's a communist. These judges are all across the country. And we should pause on this really quickly and talk just for a brief moment about why these judges are all over the country. It's not just because Democrats are evil communists. It's because Republicans are weak and pathetic, and they're too weak and pathetic to actually stand up and stop any of this madness. If you'd like to know why you have judges in place all across the country who are communist revolutionaries stopping the Trump administration, allow me to introduce you to Senator John Cornyn.
This sounds like a case of misplaced sympathy by those who are somehow saying the judge is being treated unfairly. Unfortunately, in Washington, D.C., you have these competing narratives, and people back home in Texas and elsewhere wonder, you know, what the truth is. But so far, based on what we know, based on your report, it looks to me like the judge had misplaced sympathies, and rather than enforcing the law impartially, as she should have, was actively aiding and abetting an illegal immigrant to avoid the enforcement of the law.
Let me tell you something. That way of thinking, that way of speaking, has done as much to bring about the communist revolution of this country as the communists themselves. The people we elect hoping they'll go back and fight against them, make excuses for them. Essentially, people like John Cornyn have been in Washington, D.C. for a long time, holding the door open so we can't slam it shut, letting as many communists through, misplaced sympathies. This pathetic weakness is why we are where we are. Don't speak like that. Speak like Trump speaks about these judges. Trump knows exactly what he's dealing with now.
We cannot allow a handful of communist radical left judges to obstruct the enforcement of our laws and assume the duties that belong solely to the President of the United States. Judges are trying to take away the power given to the President to keep our country safe, and it's not a good thing. But I hope, for the sake of our country, that the Supreme Court is going to save this, because we have to do something. These people are just looking to destroy our country. Nothing will stop me in the mission to keep America safe again. It's very simple. Keep America safe again.
So why hasn't the Supreme Court stepped in? They could. You realize that. 100 days into the Trump presidency, these judges have been acting this way for the entire 100 days. Why haven't they stepped in? Why hasn't John Roberts stepped up, put a stop to these ridiculous judges? Why can't he see what's happening? Why can't he see that his own legitimacy, the legitimacy of the Supreme Court, is evaporating day by day? You have people like me already saying, ignore the Supreme Court. Why won't he step in? Well, the truth is, we forget this, that judges, even Supreme Court ones, they're flesh and blood human beings. They have loves. They have fears. They have families. Why do you think Democrats routinely speak like this now?
I want to tell you, Gorsuch. I want to tell you, Kavanaugh. You have released the whirlwind, and you will pay the price. You won't know what hit you if you go forward with these awful decisions.
Right after that video, an assassin flew from California with a gun to blow Brett Kavanaugh's head off, got arrested just in time outside of his home. Maybe the Supreme Court understands Democrats are threatening their lives. That's the situation we're in. It's dire. We have an incredible show for you. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Sean Davis joins us. Next. I love feeling good. I love feeling in a good mood. I know that's kind of a stupid thing to say, because who doesn't love being in a good mood? But let me ask you something. Are you down ever now? You get down, inexplicably down. I'm not talking about, oh no, I burnt my mouth on the pizza down. I mean, really legitimately down out of nowhere. That's because your levels are all off. Natural herbal supplements from Chalk has changed my life for the better in more ways than I can count. I'm better at home. I'm better at work. My life is better. My mood is better. Naturally. Stop getting needles jammed in your arm and weird chemicals rubbed on your skin. Natural herbal supplements from Chalk. I personally take a male vitality stack every single day. They have female vitality stacks too. They have Chalk lit powder packed full of vitamins and minerals. Try it. Big fat discounts for Jesse Kelly Show listeners and I'm Right viewers. CHOQ.com/JesseTV gets you a fat discount, though. How fat? 17.76%. Chalk.com/JesseTV.
I mean, I think when you start looking at how the judge was treated after the events that led to the charge. So where and when and how she was arrested and the fact that she was arrested at the courthouse rather than her own residence, the fact that she was placed in a jail cell for hours before her arraignment was called in the court later in the afternoon. These things are unprecedented. Typically, upstanding members of the community who have no criminal history and aren't accused of a violent act are allowed to self-surrender at the time of their arraignment. The fact that they did not offer that courtesy to her and instead went out of their way to treat her harshly, I believe is an act of performative cruelty on behalf of the Department of Justice, which is not the way any Department of Justice should be acting.
Yeah. I remember how Peter Navarro got arrested. I remember that fat old man in Utah who had to use a cane to get around. He didn't even get arrested. They just flat out showed up and gunned him down. But I guess it's unprecedented. Joining me now, my friend, CEO, co-founder of the wonderful Federalist, Sean Davis. Hey, Sean, it's unprecedented that they would arrest her in public. Gosh, I can't believe this.
Well, I mean, first off, Andrew McCabe should be sharing a cell with her. The fact that that guy is out walking free after lying under oath repeatedly about his activities in the Russiagate collusion hoax is absurd. But like you, I've been alive for the last, you know, 5-10 years. I remember peaceful J6ers charged with misdemeanors having people come with guns raid at dawn to raid their homes in dark. So this idea that it's unprecedented, McCabe and all his friends were doing the same nonsense against their political enemies for years. And instead of trying to block it, he was cheering it on. And sorry to say, they're at the find out stage now of the rule of law. They're sowing and we're reaping, and the only thing that makes it better is how sad they are about it.
These people thought they were going to hold power forever, right, Sean? It's very obvious the way they conducted themselves under Joe Biden. They just thought it was never going to end, which completely blows me away. It baffles the mind, but they operate as if they will never, ever, ever be the ones on the receiving end of this stuff.
Yeah, and you know, to a certain extent, you almost have to defend that assumption because we know what Republicans looked like in Washington and how they ruled and how cowardly they were before Donald Trump showed up. So like they can almost be forgiven for assuming that Republicans will just like lie back and let Democrats do whatever they want. But it's a new era now, and the right is not the same right as it was 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. Like, we've seen what they've done. We understand, look, we wanted a certain set of rules that applied to everyone. They rejected that, so now they get their own rules good and hard. And thankfully, Donald Trump understands the importance of doing that. You can't have two systems of justice. So either we're going to have ours, where everyone is treated normally and everyone gets the right protections and is treated with dignity, or we are going to get what the left did to us for years, and that's what they're getting. And if they don't like it, tough.
Sean, talk to me about Judge Boasberg. He's been all over the news. He just, by a miracle from God on high, happens to get all these cases that's supposed to be random. He happens to get all of them dropped in his lap. And of course, he's a communist revolutionary. We don't have to mince words about the whole thing. But who is this guy? Where'd he come from?
You know, it's fascinating. He's been on the bench for a long time. He was actually on the FISA court while Andrew McCabe's FBI was illegally spying on Donald Trump and his campaign. So Boasberg, who sat back and watched that happen, to go and then magically get these cases, which weren't randomly assigned. They were supposed to go to a particular emergency judge who was on duty when a lot of these cases came in. we know he intervened and made sure that he got the case because he wanted to make himself a left-wing judicial hero. And what he's doing is nothing less than judicial tyranny, judicial insurrection. He's taken powers that don't belong to him. He's exercising authorities that no one gave to him. And he's all but daring Trump to come and ignore him, which, by the way, I hope he does sooner rather than later.
Sean, the Supreme Court. Everyone knows they should step in. Trump has said they should step in. I'm sure that, look, I've talked about it before, but if they don't, what do we do? It's one thing to say, well, Justice Roberts needs to step in and stop these judges, but if they don't, are we just done?
No, we're not. In the comparison or metaphor I would use is I would compare the Supreme Court's credibility to fiat currency. So like the little pieces of paper we carry around with dead presidents and some non-presidents on them, those only have value because we all assume they have value. It's not based on gold. It's not based on the inherent value of the piece of paper. We assume it has value, and so therefore we impute it to it value. The Supreme Court's credibility relies on the same types of assumptions. The Supreme Court has no army. It has no ability to declare war. It has no battalions it controls. It doesn't control the purse. It can't appropriate money. All it has is the assumption on behalf of the people and the two other branches that it is worth listening to and following. And so the longer that this goes on with John Roberts allowing the circus to continue, the more likely it is that we all just decide, you know what, when it comes to the president or Congress, you actually don't have the power to do anything if we don't acknowledge it. So we're going to steamroll you and ignore you, and you can write all the fun little opinions and papers that you want. But at the end of the day, if no one believes that you have the authority to do what you're doing, then you truly have no authority to do anything and you're meaningless. And I think in the long run, that would be bad for people to get to that point, but they're making it inevitable. It's not Donald Trump making this inevitable. It is the fecklessness and the cowardice of this Supreme Court doing nothing that's going to make it inevitable if they continue down this road.
Sean, this is why they threaten these people. This is why it's not just Chuck Schumer. Everyone saw that little tidbit. We played it in the opening. Everyone's seen it before. Democrat after Democrat has threatened these judges. We've had multiple protests in front of their homes. We had an assassin almost come very, very close to actually killing Brett Kavanaugh. This wasn't done accidentally. It made these people be afraid. Amy Coney Barrett just had a bomb threat for her sister. The left knows what it's doing.
Yeah, and this is the same intimidation game they played with John Roberts back in, I think it was 2012, with the Obamacare decision. He understood it was unconstitutional. He knew that Congress and Obama didn't have the authority to do what they did. But because he got intimidated and the New York Times said some mean things about him, he switched his vote at the last minute. And that's basically defined his entire tenure as Chief Justice and as a member of the Supreme Court. He's a coward who can be bullied around. Personally, I think that a lot of what he has said, that he cares about the legitimacy of the court and this and that, I think that's just a smokescreen for he wants to be in charge. He wants to make certain decisions. And when he gets to do what he wants, the court is protecting its legitimacy. And that when he doesn't want to do something he doesn't want, he couches it in the same language. I think these people really, I think they're just cowards. I don't think it's more complicated than that.
Let's shift gears really quickly and talk about this guy.
I was very involved. Our field office, FBI San Francisco, was very involved in helping to protect the U.S. elections in 2020. And I think we can all agree, or I think many of us can agree, that it was a very safe election. We talked with all of these entities I mentioned regularly, at least on a monthly basis, and right before the election, probably on a weekly basis, right? If they were seeing anything unusual, if we were seeing anything unusual, sharing intelligence with technology companies, with social media companies, so that they could protect their own platforms, right?
Why is Elvis Chan not in prison? I'm happy he's on leave. Why not prison?
Yeah, I had the exact same question. You beat me to it. This guy was a key part of an illegal censorship effort during an election, that a time when we should all be able to speak freely more than any other time because of the stakes. He and his corrupt agency were out there telling these social media companies that the Hunter Biden laptop was fake, that it was Russian disinformation, when they had known for more than a year that that was a lie. He should be in handcuffs, not on television. He should not be on leave. He should have been frog marched out of that building in handcuffs, awaiting indictment for what he and his entire garbage agency did to this country over years. So I don't have a good answer for you. Hopefully somebody somewhere does, or maybe they're working on it and they just haven't gotten to it yet.
Hopefully. Sean, my brother, thank you. All right. We're not done. Let's talk to Hammer next. Put your money where your morals are and switch your cell phone. And I know we don't like to make changes. I don't like to change anything. We threw a fit in our house when Ob switched out the kind of peanut butter we used. I get that. So let me incentivize you a little bit. One, it's super easy. Just do it on your phone. Take you a few minutes. It won't take long. Two, you get a brand new phone. Qualifying plans start at just $35 a month. You get a brand new Samsung Galaxy right now when you switch to PureTalk. A brand new smartphone? I'm not talking about some junky flip phone. A brand new smartphone. And you can have your bill go way down. My bill got cut in half when we switched. You save money? Brand new phone? Why wouldn't you switch? PureTalk.com/JesseTV. And keep in mind, they don't give to left-wing causes like your mobile company does. PureTalk.com/JesseTV.
The idea that no person is above the law is a bedrock principle of American justice.
No man is above the law, no matter what the crime.
And I agree with you. No man is above the law. No person is above the law.
No one is above the law.
No one is above the law.
No one's above the law.
No one is above the law.
No man is above the law.
Nobody is above the law.
No one is above the law.
No man is above the law.
He has to be held accountable. He's not above the law.
No one's above the law.
Either that nor any other title put you above the rule of law.
I miss those days. Joining me now, my friend Josh Hammer, host of the Josh Hammer Show. Hey, Josh, nobody is above the law. Man, I love it. I love watching these judges in handcuffs. It does my heart well.
Jesse, I mean, ever since Alvin Bragg trotted out there with that ridiculous 34-count indictment against Donald Trump on the Stormy Daniels, Michael Cohen, I mean, it really feels like a whole nother lifetime ago, doesn't it? But ever since then, for the following year and a half, how many Democrats got up there and said exactly what this montage just showed? No one is above the law. It is incumbent upon us to hold all of us to the same legal standard. By the way, ironic side note, I don't think leftist Jesse know where this notion of no one above the law, I don't think they understand where that actually comes from. That's actually from the Bible. In fact, the English common law, which famously said that the king is not above the law, the common lawyer who wrote that into the common law was literally citing the Hebrew Bible, the book of Deuteronomy, when he cited it. So kind of funny how the left doesn't realize when they're citing the Bible. But that's just a whole aside here. The point for our purposes is, what a bunch of galling hypocrites. I mean, what a bunch of stinking, raging, smelly, loony toony hypocrites here. No one is above the law until it is their own person who is shielding an illegal alien, who is obstructing the ICE agent's attempt to arrest this illegal alien. That's what happened, of course, with Hannah Dugan in Wisconsin. Until their own person is purportedly not above the law, well, that's when that judge actually is above the law. By the way, another point on this judge in Wisconsin, though, Jesse, though. We're dealing here with a state court judge who is accused and seems to me quite obviously did violate federal law. You know, the Democrats have a long and inglorious history in this country, Jesse, of trying to pretend that federal law has to bend the knee to state law. Last I checked, Democrats fought an entire civil war in the entire 19th century. We lost a lot of people to defend the principle that federal law is supreme to state law. It's actually right there in the Constitution, Article 6, it's the Supremacy Clause, very clearly says this Constitution and all laws passed pursuant thereto are the supreme law of the land. So what you're seeing here, it's not just hypocrisy, it's also the rise of what I like to refer to as a neo-Confederate sentiment, because they're basically just making the same arguments about how federal law is not actually supreme, at least as it applies to their friends. It's definitely supreme when it applies to their enemies. But they're saying that it's not supreme, and that's basically the same argument in many ways that John C. Calhoun and antebellum pre-Civil War slaveholders made. So, you know, history has a way of repeating itself, Jesse, and that's also what we're seeing play out here in Wisconsin.
What's that quote? For my friends, everything. For my enemies, the law. It's pretty obvious what the game is here, Josh. As soon as they have control of the law, they want to use it to throw their political opponents in prison. As soon as we have control of it, well, then it's a constitutional crisis, of course. If any one of these vile little scumbags gets arrested and thrown into prison, it just, for normal people, Josh, it's so eye-popping to see a judge whisk away an illegal out the back of her private chambers to avoid arrest. It just, honestly, it's so in your face. It's amazing.
I mean, the brazenness of this is really just next level, right? I mean, when I first read this headline, Jesse, I mean, my jaw, like, physically dropped. I was like, this judge did what? I mean, like, what the heck just happened here? And by the way, just to illustrate here, I think this is probably a helpful example. So they're saying that this judge is above the law because how dare Donald Trump have the temerity, the chutzpah, and his FBI agents, his brown shirts, his jackboots, how dare they arrest a judge here? So we're talking about a state court judge here. Let's say hypothetically that a state court judge walked into the local tavern, into local pub in town there, because the judge found out that his wife was having an affair. And let's say that the judge found the guy that his wife was sleeping with, took out his revolver, and shot that guy dead in the head there. Would the left really say that that judge cannot be prosecuted? I mean, this example just gives away the game here, which is their talking point that a judge in this case is above the law is just so transparently stupid. And it is so transparently stupid because it has everything to do with the fact that they simply do not want federal immigration law enforced. That is obviously the end-all, be-all here. Democrats have been fighting against federal immigration law for quite literally decades, that it is the entire purpose of sanctuary cities, sanctuary jurisdictions, sanctuary states, and so forth there. They have no interest in abiding by immigration law at best. At worst, they have every interest in the world in actively subverting it there. But as you said, the number one takeaway for me from this whole Hannah Dugan affair in Wisconsin is exactly the quote that you said, which is for my friends, anything, for my enemies, the law.
Josh, how's Donald Trump handling packing the lower courts? It's obvious the Biden administration was very purposeful. To their credit, give your enemy credit where it's due. They're very purposeful about getting their little communists in robes and places of power all across the country. How are we doing?
Well, nothing yet. There has not been a single judicial nominee announced, but I'm told that it literally could be any day. In fact, if it happens tomorrow, I would not be surprised. I mean, it literally is any day at this point. Now, it's not necessarily the administration's fault. I mean, Democrats, Chuck Schumer, they've been pulling out all the procedural parliamentary tactics stunts in the Senate to basically slow down the executive branch confirmation schedule there. But by middle to end of this month, really based on my calculations and based on my sources, the executive branch really should have all of its high to mid-level officials in place. Not everyone, because there's a bit of a backlog at PPO. It's getting a little bit in the weeds. But the point is, by mid to late May, we should have a situation where the Trump administration feels satisfied that most of its top ranking, most important political appointees are in place. At that point, Jesse, it's really time to kind of get the gears in motion when it comes to stacking not just Article 2, but Article 3. And there are indeed dozens and dozens of current judicial vacancies. Most of them are on federal trial courts, but every federal judgeship these days is important, especially in today's post-constitutional era of judicial supremacy run amok there. So I've got a lot of thoughts on what we should be looking for when it comes to judicial nominees, and I'm optimistic that the administration will hopefully listen to some of it.
Okay, well, what are those thoughts, and are they listening?
Well, I think they are. We will see when the proof is in the pudding, but I guess I will just say this, Jesse. So, you know, among the hats that I wear these days is I'm senior counsel at the Article 3 Project, where my good friend Mike Davis is the founder and president there. And we at Article 3 Project think that we are going to have a lot of outside friendly influence when it comes. I'm not saying that we're the masterminds here. We're not the puppets. Obviously, those decisions are ultimately made by President Trump himself. He has the White House Counsel's Office, the Office of Legal Policy. There's a lot of moving parts of the judicial nominations apparatus. But I am inclined to believe that this second Trump administration is going to be a little more aggressive, a little more assertive, and frankly, just less afraid to pick people who are overtly ready and willing to get their hands dirty. So, Jesse, real quick, I have a new essay out for TomKlingenstein.com, basically four things that I am personally looking for when it comes to trying to vet judicial nominees in this second Trump term. The first thing is just do the reading. Make sure that they actually have a spotless record. In the past, conservatives have simply failed to do the reading sometimes. We've been surprised when we should not have been surprised because there might have been a black mark back in a judicial opinion from 15 years ago that we just missed. That's number one. Number two, is vet for full spectrum across the board conservatism. I am sick of these libertarian and corporatist pansies who just obsess over economic size of government issues while not saying a darn word or caring about things like sovereignty, borders, life, transgenderism, LGBT, religion. I mean, a lot of the cultural issues. That's number two. Number three, kind of going down the list here, arguably most important is you have to try to vet for judges, especially at the Supreme Court level, if we get a Supreme Court vacancy, who are ready, willing, and able to use all of the tools at their disposal. They have to be willing to actually vote for a writ of certiorari and actually hear difficult cases. They have to be justices who are not going to punt on a difficult case on so-called standing grounds. We've seen Amy Coney Barrett do this many, many times, for instance, there. So that would be point number three. Then point number four is probably most controversially, Jesse, I actually care a lot about the nominee's private life. Like, who are you married to? I call this the spouse test. Is your spouse, your husband, your wife, as right wing as you are? That's the person that you're ultimately going to come back to at night there, you know, sleeping next to you at your bedside. You better make sure that your spouse is actually in your corner. I want to know what kind of house of worship you go to. If you're going to a rainbow flag church or synagogue, no chance. That's an automatic disqualifier there. So the actual personal life I care a lot about as well.
I had to go to a concert last weekend at a church, had a big sign out front that said, "Love is love" and "Black Lives Matter" and all kinds of commie crap. Couldn't get out of there fast enough. Josh, my friend, thank you. I appreciate you. I like it. And it sounds like we're gearing up. Look, we got a lot of work to do. We have to fill up as many seats, more seats than they filled up. Anyway, what happens when you let these people take over an area? Have you paid attention to Minneapolis? Liz Collin, wonderful investigative reporter, is going to join us next and talk about some of that. Hang on. I sleep so good. I love to sleep. But every now and then, we all go through the same thing. We had too much caffeine or too much stress or something. Got a big day tomorrow. I want to take something to sleep. I want to take something. You've done that. We've all done that. But what do you take? The problem with it is everything you take to help you sleep, whether it be over the counter, maybe the doctor wrote you a prescription, everything has you waking up feeling like garbage the next day. Except for the one thing I've found, Dream Powder from Beam. It's the only thing I've ever found. It's a cup of hot chocolate, which I thought was unique. It's delicious. You'd never know there was anything in it, but it's got reishi and melatonin and all kinds of things in it. You sip on it about a half hour before you sleep. You'll just kind of drift off to sleep. Not knock out, just drift off to sleep. And then you wake up in the morning, ready to go, feeling like $1 million. Get that in your life. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly gets you up to 40% off. So go save some money. Remember Derek Chauvin? Name probably rings a bell, certainly not as famous as George Floyd, but he was the cop. He was the cop. We all woke up, the video, the kneeling, the everything else. He was the cop. He's currently in prison. He's already been stabbed in prison. Was he convicted correctly? Rightly? Was that justice? Well, he had a trial, long trial, and at the end of it, he was convicted. Liz Collin, wonderful investigative reporter for Alpha News, was all over that entire thing. Hey, Liz, tell me about that trial.
Hey, Jesse, thanks for having me back on. Yeah, the trial in many ways, as we've reported on, it's almost as if the script was written before it even began. Many questionable tactics used by the prosecution in Derek Chauvin's state trial. Also, the judge Peter Cahill, who interestingly retired from the bench a couple years early, recently retired as Chauvin's appeal has been moving forward. But you have a jury that was not sequestered during Derek Chauvin's trial at all. Remember, keep in mind, this is probably the most high-profile criminal case in Minnesota state history. Instead, the jury is paraded in and out of the Hennepin County Courthouse every day, lined with concrete barriers and fencing, members of the National Guard with their rifles slung over their shoulders. These are all images that the jury would see each and every day. And many things came to light about the testimony. Were people telling the truth during the testimony? And I know we're going to talk a little bit more about a defamation case that has now been settled and dismissed, where that part, the truth about testimony, was really at the heart of that defamation case. So you're right. Lawfare certainly alive and well, even now, 5 years later, here in Minnesota.
Well, let's talk about that defamation case right now. Let's talk about the truth, because it's kind of a big deal if people lie during a trial and a man goes to prison for it. Who lied?
Well, it's interesting. In October, Alpha News and myself, we were sued for the fall of Minneapolis and my book, They're Lying, The Media, The Left, and the Death of George Floyd. The assistant police chief of Minneapolis, Katie Blackwell, keep in mind she received a couple of promotions since her testimony in Chauvin's trials. She's now serving as the second in command at the Minneapolis Police Department. But she went ahead with this defamation lawsuit, saying that we lied about her testimony by putting her own words on camera in the fall of Minneapolis specifically. And she says during that trial that this technique that Chauvin and the other officers were using is not something she recognized, and it's not how the Minneapolis Police Department trained. So as part of this dismissal that we went forward with, trying to ask the judge to throw out this lawsuit, we received 34 signed declarations that stated that Katie Blackwell, in fact, was lying. 14 officers went so far to say she committed perjury in Derek Chauvin's case, and these 34 officers in total said, no, we trained. We absolutely know what was going on that day. This was the maximal restraint technique. And ultimately, just a few weeks ago, the judge dismissed this case against us and really pointed to the claims that were made in the book and the documentary that, in fact, Katie Blackwell was lying on the stand.
Okay, Liz, well, help me understand this then, because I'm just a dumb, uneducated fool here. If one of the main witnesses was lying, and now we know, as your documentation proves, she was lying, and that lie helped convict Derek Chauvin and send him to prison, why is he still in prison?
Jesse, it's an excellent question, and we continue to keep people updated on the fallofminneapolis.com if you click on the news section there. So several things are now currently happening. We know that Derek Chauvin's new attorney is using these signed declarations in Chauvin's appeal, which is ongoing. We think that is likely to be heard in November, perhaps, his state appeal that's going on right now. And there are some things happening with Katie Blackwell, complaints that she could be in trouble from her law enforcement career here now that this is documented and a judge backs this up. In fact, it says in this ruling, which was more than 50 pages by Judge Edward Wall, this is also in Hennepin County. This is a judge in Hennepin County where this case was dismissed. But under the facts, it is possible to interpret Blackwell's testimony as incomplete or misleading by omission. And there's 10 different references in that ruling from Judge Wall really speaking to substantial truth. Did she tell the truth that day? But a case, obviously, we will continue to follow. This dismissal of our case, I think, will mean a lot more going forward here.
Yeah, I think it will. Derek Chauvin isn't alone up there in the wonderful state of Minnesota, is he, as far as cops that are getting railroaded and taken to the cleaners?
You know, sadly, Minneapolis really became the home state, if you will, for the defund the police movement. That's what Minneapolis, sadly, seems to be known for now, and that spread all across the country and the globe, I guess you could say, in the wake of George Floyd's death. But yeah, you're right. The Minneapolis Police Department down still by more than 40% of the officers that were once there. And we have the mainstream media here in town, the corporate media, continue to parrot the fact that things are fine and, you know, crime is down. We hear all of those things. However, I will say that as we're talking and here today, Jesse, there have been five homicides in a matter of 18 hours that happened in Minneapolis. Oh. So I will be the first to tell you that crime, in fact, is not down, and it's a pretty sad state of affairs here in Minnesota. You're right.
Liz, this has to be affecting not just obviously the normal people like you and safety, but this has to be affecting the business environment. There's no way businesses are going to stay in a place with homicides and God only knows how many robberies you must have with 40% reduction in the police force.
That's it. The policies continue to change here now, even years later. Officers have to report if they put handcuffs on a person. They have to get basically a supervisor's permission to arrest someone on the scene. It's really just wild, the stories we continue to hear and report on here at Alpha News. But thousands of businesses in Minneapolis have either left or are closed their doors permanently in the last 5 years. That's no secret. I know there was just another restaurant in St. Paul that closed their doors. It had been around for a long time, and they were the first to come out and say this is because of crime. Downtown St. Paul is not safe. Our business continues to be broken into, just kind of this beloved restaurant that had been a part of downtown St. Paul for years. But these are stories we continue to hear.
Apparently, you're also allowed to vandalize Teslas up there. Do I have that right?
I'm glad we're hitting, Jesse, all the highlights here in Minnesota. But yes, this is another story that went national just recently. But this is a state worker. Dylan Adams is his name. He went out from his condo in downtown Minneapolis walking his dog and keyed at least six Teslas in the downtown Minneapolis area. And get this, this is $20,000 in damage that we're aware of to these six Teslas. But our Soros-backed county attorney, Mary Moriarty, went ahead and gave Dylan Adams diversion through all of this. You know, he's going to be able to avoid this felony charge if he completes this program. It's sort of just this unprecedented use of diversion. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. And even the Minneapolis Police Department came out and said, you know, our cops did all this work, put all this together, you know, arrested this guy. And now at the end of the day, he's given diversion, a real slap in the face to law enforcement yet again.
Yeah. Pray for the cops up there. Praying for you guys, Liz. Stay safe. All right. We're not done yet. Final thoughts next. The judges have to go to prison. We have a lot of work to do. The legal system has been conquered. But we can take it back. It's just going to take time. We just have to keep talking about these things, keep making sure our politicians care about these things. All right, do it again.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.